Neville Wright joins us. Neville, how you doing?
All right. Thanks for having me.
We're going to have a sprint challenge later on. Mark, back at the studio, is going to be racing Jason Strudwick in a 20-meter sprint. You're telling me in bobsleigh, you guys really just focus on 15 meters. Is that right?
We do 15 and 30 meters.
Okay. And so in 15, what was your fastest time?
206.
206. And what about the 30?
358.
358. Now, you used to be a sprinter, did you not, before you got... So, you obviously have a bit of an advantage. In those short ones, it's all about the start. Yes. How do you get a good start as a sprinter?
It's all about technique, activation, and moving with purpose.
Okay. What's activation? Like, activating
so
what?
So, knowing, like, to, for example, being able to activate your glutes, activation of abdominals, like TA and pelvic floor, and just being able to recruit properly when you're going to sprint.
Transferring from that to the bobsleigh, where you don't get down anymore, right? Now you stand up as a sprinter, and you know you're pushing on the machine a lot. And obviously you're not the driver when you're in bobsleigh. You're one of the strong guys looking at your physique that's pushing. do you never then, when you do your training, you probably don't start then down. You always start half up.
Yep, slightly crouched, but up still.
So when you start from a slightly crouched stance compared to being down, how does that change? What does certain muscles fire differently at that point?
Well, the difference is because we're used to kind of standing in that, being in that position where we're doing standing starts versus me being the blocks when I used to be a sprinter.
Yeah.
So in that position, it's basically the same.
Okay.
That, yeah. Just I got to be more disciplined in recruiting and keeping everything strong and tight when I hit the sled.
Bobsled is obviously, you know, it's become more and more competitive now than it ever has been. And what's unique about it, and some like it and some don't, is the way the teams are picked for Canada. Like, it's very competitive, and you could be on Team A and you guys are playing, are doing great, but right up until the Olympics, I think last year was like 2 weeks out or even three, they can switch guys in or out. Having been a part of that process, is that good for the sport?
Well, I mean, in the end, The number one thing that we're looking for is results. And as we train throughout the year, like, athletes learn to be pretty disciplined and being able to be adaptable to switch to different positions or on different sleds. So, I mean, it can be good and can be bad at times too, because when you're with a team and you're with them throughout the whole season and then you switch, you kind of sometimes can lose that team dynamic.
So here we are. It's 2015. The Olympics aren't until February of 2018, so just under 3 years away.
Yeah.
Is the main goal then for people, for you, are you saying, okay, I want to be at the Olympics, not necessarily world championships? How do you balance that so your body's functioning and healthy for that February 2018 Olympics?
Well, now, so it's all about process and taking time. So, I mean, I build up through each year, getting myself stronger, faster, more efficient. And then by the time the Olympic year happens, that's where, you know, you're on your A game throughout the season, leading all the way to the games.
So now, how long have you been training with the people at River Valley Health now at the base?
So I've been, prior to bobsleigh, track and field, I was coming here since probably around 2005, I believe.
Okay.
Just getting, like, tons of rehab, therapy. After that, the last year, the Olympic season, I was actually here quite a bit, working on getting myself stronger. So by,
because their philosophy, they focus a lot on making sure, you know, you move properly.
Yeah.
Right. So you know, you're an elite level athlete, and they come to you and say, well, Neville, you're really not firing your glutes properly. Right. And it's funny, because I know they train a lot of NHL guys, and, you know, great athletes, but they're not actually engaging their glutes. When they told you that the first time, were you like, what the hell are you talking about, man? Like, I think I know what I'm doing.
Well, I mean, for me too, I've always been a hyper aware athlete, so sometimes you have other things kind of going on in your body, so you might ignore some things. So it's like, it's a good reminder to be like, make sure you're firing these glutes, make sure you're activating your core, or so forth.
So do you do that? Do you find yourself now that you, like, you're a hyperactive, a hyper-aware athlete, when you're going to sit down normal at home, do you know, like, are you activating your core and your glutes properly all the time?
Or do you think what happens to a point is that I do with routine, and I keep doing it over and over to the point that you don't even think about it anymore. It just happens, kind of thing.
Okay. And how much of a difference did it make for you once they taught you how to engage, you know, your core and your glutes and your lats properly? How much of a difference did that make?
Well, I mean, it helped actually quite a bit. Last year, the Olympic year, I had some issues with my knees and my back and everything like that, and they actually really worked on getting me to activate certain parts, like, really well, glutes, quads, so forth, so that I could actually be a lot more efficient. So it actually made quite a difference for me.
So now your knees were strained because you weren't activating the proper muscles around it?
Well, it was a combination of wear and tear.
Okay.
I've been doing competing at a high level for the last 13 years. And then, so, like, as you keep pushing yourself, sometimes you neglect certain issues, like firing the glutes properly and stuff. So it's all more about firing things properly and then just cleaning up certain tight muscles and so forth.
Olympian Neville Wright joins me. We are live at the base, 180th Street, 111th Ave. Come in today. You get some free training. They've got the free yoga classes if you want to take part in that. They kind of call it yoga for jocks. I tried a class last week. Like, I thought yoga was tough because I'm about as flexible as a crowbar. Yoga was even harder. I did not like it at all, to be completely honest. But I could see the benefits of it for sure. Have you taken one of the yoga classes?
No, I haven't yet. But
I highly recommend it. It's really fun. Yeah. Well, yeah, being an athlete, you're probably a little bit more flexible than I am, so you won't find it as challenging. But it was, and it's not even hot in here. Like, I've done hot yoga, and I thought that was tough. Yoga was even harder. I wanted to the Kaiser, you know, you do the reaction time, because obviously in bobsleigh that's key.
Yeah.
Does that even help you when you do that, the vision training? Do you find that allows your sight, so everything now you're explosive with the eyes as much as the knees and the legs and everything else?
Yeah, I think like everything plays a role. Everything from like just being aware overall between your muscles, your joints to visual cues and so forth too.
So now you're taking some time off. You're rehabbing everything to get ready to shoot for 2018. When do you get back on the track?
So next year I might have to do a race or two, but I'm still trying to get myself really healthy, because the goal is to really take the time, since I still have a lot of time towards the next games, take some time, and then by the year after I should be back into competing.
So when you take a year off, how long does it take you to get back into it in bobsleigh?
Well, the good thing is that when you're trained for so long, you don't really detrain as fast. So, I mean, I still train to a certain level and get myself healthy, and then eventually, start doing some sprints and stuff. So it doesn't take too long to get back at it.
How much more competitive is it now as a Canadian bobsleigher, just to make the team, compared to when you first started?
It's way more competitive because you're getting guys that are a lot stronger and faster. Even for pilots, you're having brakemen turning into pilots, so it changes the entire dynamics of the sport. The sport's a lot faster now.
Now, what are you, when you're competing, what do you weigh?
Last year I was about 225.
And how tall are you?
6 foot.
6 foot, 225, and that's like muscular, in shape. How much weight, like heavy weight training, do you do?
We do actually quite a bit, especially in the beginning of the year. We go really, really heavy, and but our volume starts to decrease, but we maintain that intensity.
And which are you doing, like Olympic lifting? Are you doing deadlift squats? What's the focus point now for bobsleigh?
So for me, because everyone has their different strengths, for me, I would do squats, but my main focus I would do for my heavy lifts was trap bar deadlift and Olympic lifting.
So what do you deadlift?
My best ever is about 660 pounds.
660?
Yeah, so 303 kilos.
Wow. And now trap deadlift, what's the difference between a regular deadlift
and a trap bar deadlift? Is more you're standing in like a little octagon shape bar.
Yeah.
And you grab handles from the side.
Okay, so the bar's not in front of you, it's
no.
at the side.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a suitcase lunge where you're coming up like that from the side?
Yeah.
And you're doing 660 that way, so would a regular deadlift, you could probably do more?
No, regular deadlift, you probably end up doing a bit less.
Oh, doing less?
You have a better... For me, it's a better position for me. And a better
Okay.
Grip. Yeah.
Well, Neville, man, I really appreciate your insight. Best of luck with rehab. And I know you haven't met Strudwick or Majot, but, Strud's former NHLer, has been retired now for 4 years. Majot, in his words, was growing up a nerd, but he used to know how to run away from the Bruins, and he says he's very quick and explosive. Who are you going to take in our sprint off, 20-meter sprint, Strudwick or Majot?
I'm down for it. I'll take on both.
You'll take? Oh, well. Can I put my money on you right now? I was saying, I said Neville going backwards might be able to beat them.
We'll have to see.
Hey, maybe we'll have a twist to the sprint off later on today. Have you ever timed yourself backwards?
No.
No? Well, just be curious. I'd be curious to know. Because hey, who knows? If you could do 2:06 in 15 seconds, because it's all about the time. Like, what do you think would be a good, for an average Joe, in 20 meters. Like, should they get it in 3 seconds?
Oh, it'd be nice to get below that. Like, I mean, if for an average guy, I mean, if he can get around 250.
250?
That'd be good, yeah.
That'd be pretty good. Okay, Majot, that's what you got to shoot for, 250.
Oh, I can pull that off. I'm feeling confident, fellas. Feeling confident.
Do you have any quick warm-up moves so they don't pull a hammy? Or don't warm up. Is it better just to go in?
No, I would just warm up as long as you can.
As long as, Majot, start stretching now then at the studio is what Neville's saying. During commercial breaks, do some sprinting on the spot. Make sure you're well and warm.
Maybe that's, skip the drive here.
Yeah, don't even drive here. Run over here.
I'll sprint here, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.